Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
This summer celebrates the 50th anniversary of the Supremes' first number one hit single, Where Did Our Love Go?, which catapulted their career, transforming them from no-hit Supremes to the world's greatest female group of all time. For the celebration, they've just released Diana Ross and the Supremes' 50th anniversary, the singles 1961 to 1969, a three-CD box set which includes every A and B side, including the group's 14 number one pop and R&B hits, as well as their early, though beloved, flops like Buttered Popcorn and Your Heart Belongs to Me. Since her time with the Supremes, Mary Wilson has become a best-selling author, a motivational speaker, a former U.S. cultural ambassador, and humanitarian. It is a great pleasure to welcome Mary Wilson to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
What do you make of 50 years? Is it interesting to put it in that perspective?
First of all, I should say that it seems like it was just yesterday. Well, maybe not just yesterday, but they say that time flies when you're having fun. So, when I think back of when we were called the Primettes, before we became the Supremes, and I think about all the fun we had and the challenges of having maybe seven records released and none of them were hits. It's a fond memory, but then the time when we got the number one, it was just like a dream came true. So when I think back 50 years, it's like, my God, we really did accomplish our dreams. Mm. And no, it doesn't seem like 50 years, but I guess it has been.
Can you ever understand fully what it was about the switch being thrown of how many singles there were prior to you going number one? As all of the groups around you were hitting that magic number, do you know what it was or even try to think about why it wasn't you?
First of all, I must say that we knew we were good.
Right.
I mean, really, we knew we were great. we were only 15, 16 years old. But still, there was such magic in us, and being together as a group and doing these wonderful record hops and running down to Motown, meeting all these great other talented geniuses. I mean, Stevie Wonder, at 9 years old, Marvin Gaye. Being around Motown was just a fabulous time. I mean, what can I say? It was just great. However, when we didn't get into to the business because we were trying to make hit records. We didn't get in there because we were trying to make a lot of money. We got into it because we enjoyed doing it. So after a while of really, releasing records, recording, and being around these other great people, we kind of realized that, wow, this is something we want to do forever. And after that, Mr. Berry Gordy understood or recognized that we were very serious at that young age. We were serious about what we were doing. We enjoyed it. We loved it. We were good. Our biggest thing was, why haven't anybody else recognized how great we are? So, having those big heads, I would say we had big heads. Mr. Gordy said, I'm going to put you girls with one of my top writing teams and, see what happens. And when he did that with Holland Doors of Holland, that's when the magic really, took off. And we got the first hit record. And then, of course, there were five consecutive number ones. That was just almost unheard of by anybody. I don't think anyone at the time, Elvis or the Beatles, we were girls coming into a male world, So it was just fantastic.
So with that history, does that song become more special? So you look at Where Did Our Love Go, and there's the music itself, but then there's what it means to you and the history of that group.
Well, you mentioned a couple of things, a couple of songs earlier on, Buttered Popcorn and Your Heart Belongs to Me and Let Me Go the Right Way, When the Love Light Shines, all those songs that were not hits were very special to us. I mean, we thought every one of them was just great. But, of course, it's a business, and the business dictates that in order for you to be great or one of the greatest, you have to have hit records. So, I mean, that's what we were eventually finding out. And that's why eventually, you know, we realized that, well, this is what we've got to go for. It doesn't make that particular record any greater than the others. It does mean that perhaps you found your niche, you found your sound, you found your image, you found your everything kind of comes to the word they use nowadays is the synergy. You know, everything becomes one, and then from there, it happens. So that's kind of what happened to us.
You look at this collection, and it's the singles 1961 to 69. The output was incredible. I mean, the amount of music that you were putting out, and really good music, is really incredible.
Yes, well, you know, we enjoyed doing it, and it, for us, it just made, as I said earlier, made our dreams real. You know, we were living our dream. I guess because Holland Dozier Holland, that's Eddie, Brian, and Lamont, being with them, we actually found our place in history and music, and you know, but we were also more than just music. We became, you know, our image of glamour, and it was at a time when civil rights and the social, you know, the social atmosphere in America was changing, and we were like right at the peak of it, and became one of the faces of the new Black America that was, you know, international. I mean, we became international stars. We started doing command performances. We were hanging out with the future king of Sweden, you know.
Right.
So it made everything just now it happens, and it was just a great time. And of course, as you mentioned, the music was what was propelling all of that.
And how aware were you of what else was going on in the music scene? So as the Beatles and the Stones and other groups are emerging, how aware are you of that? Because you're having your own success.
Well, I can only speak for myself, but I mean, I was always aware of music because music has been in my life since I was a little girl. My dad had a huge music collection. I mean, he had the 78 records, you know, and all that, 33 and a half. And so I grew up as a little child listening to all this music my entire life. So it was always a big part of me, but it was a part of my personal life. So once we became famous and, of course, hanging out with other performers and working with them, you know, very much aware of whatever. But my favorite kind of music was always kind of jazz. I mean, it was that, you know, I listened to the Joe Williams, you know, and people like that. So, and Nancy Wilson, Lena Horne, Julie London, you know, music was always a part of my life. So now that we're hanging out with them, we started working with the likes of, you know, Bob Hope, Sammy Davis, Ethel Waters, Pearl Bailey, you know, and they're going to Europe and England and hanging out with, one of my favorite groups was the Rolling Stones. In fact, I'm working with Bill Wyman coming up this the end of this year in Europe. He has his own band called the Rhythm King. So, he and I have remained friends since the early days when the Rolling Stones first came here. And we did this big show called Tammy. I don't know if you're old
sure.
enough to know that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, Tammy had everybody on there. I mean, from Jan and Dean to Leslie Gore, and no one really knew much about the Rolling Stones. James Brown, and the big story that Bill and I still talk about, he talks about, is that Dick Clark said, well, he's going to have the Rolling Stones close the show instead of James Brown. And it was a big to-do backstage in terms of the James was something like, that Rolling Stones, who are they? They're going to close behind me. And then Rolling Stones were saying, oh, my God, we got to come behind James Brown. You know, that was the dynamic that was going backstage. And it was just wonderful. But Bill and I have remained friends all these years. Of course, he's no longer with the Rolling Stones, haven't been for quite some time. But, you know, he always remembers that time when he said the Supremes and I think it was Marvin Gaye who came up to him and said, don't worry about it, guys. You know, you just go out there and do your thing, da-da-da. So anyway, he and I remained friends from all those years. So the music business has, you know, that's been my life, my love.
Is that a life to live when you're young? I mean, as you look back on it now, are you glad you lived through it when you were so young?
Well, I am. You know, I don't think it's the same for everyone. You know, we were fortunate being young and at Motown because we did get a lot of guidance that helped us. I think that sometimes when you're young and you don't have that sort of maternal kind of, you know, lesson that you get from people, good people who are really looking after your behalf, that it can be kind of scary. I mean, I've seen a lot of lives destroyed because they're, you know, money machines, and that's all people kind of care about. So it can be different for different people. For us, for me, it worked out great, and so I think it was great for me to have that opportunity to live that kind of life, but still learn as I was going along, still being a child, still being able to grow and to study. You know, I see some kids out there now who are making so much money, but they haven't had a chance to study what they're doing. They're thrown out there. They don't know the ins and outs of it, and it can be scary. It can ruin your life.
And it's study going into it and studying it when you're on the road and when you're with people like Joe Williams and Pearl Bailey and Lena Horne.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
you learn from those experiences.
Oh, sure. No, you learn from seeing, yes, and being with the professionals. Personally, I'm about to start a new venture where I hopefully can help artists who are out there, some of them starting out, some who have been out there for a while, but to share my expertise, because that's what we had at Motown. We had a lot of professional people who had retired and come to Motown, and they, in turn, taught us. You know, people like our choreographer, Charlie Atkins. We had the artist development teacher, Maxine Powell, who taught us. She hates the word etiquette, but, you know, she was our finishing school teacher. We had Maurice King, who had been a big band leader, and he was there teaching us all the harmonies and this and that. You had Harry Fuqua. You had a lot of wonderful people who gave us their expertise, and that's really something that I think is needed out there today. So I'm about to embark upon that kind of a venture, and hopefully I can get it started and share some of my expertise.
What do you make of the Motown musical?
Oh, the Motown musical is fabulous. It's something I know Mr. Berry Gordy has wanted to do for years and years and years, so I'm glad that he actually did it, and it's a smash. You know, and it's his perception of what was going on. When you're at the top looking down, you don't know all the different stories, you know. So, you know, it's his viewpoint, and it's a huge company. Everybody has a story, you know, so everyone could probably do their own story. but I think that it's just great, and I love that people are flocking to it. In fact, I believe they're having an opening of the show, the musical, in London.
Yes.
Coming up this fall, so I'm hoping to be there for that.
And for people to, you realize, as we mark 50 years, you realize that people, some people are just being introduced to the story. They know the music, of course, in many cases, but they learn the story this way amongst other ways.
Yes, yes, and that's good. I mean, because it keeps the music going. It's great because you got a whole generation, new generation of people who are watching. You have some of them who the music grew up in their household because their parents were looking at it. So now they get a chance to actually see certain things for themselves. I think it's great.
Well, we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Supremes' first number one hit single, Where Did Our Love Go? For that celebration, they have just released Diana Ross and the Supremes' 50th anniversary, the singles 1961 to 1969, a 3-CD box set. Mary Wilson, a great pleasure having you on the program. Thank you very much.
But please don't let me go right now. I have something I want to say about what I'm doing right now.
Oh, yes. What are you doing right now?
Oh, wow. Hey. This is the one thing that a lot of our artists, we talk about. It's like everyone wants to know our history, but we're still out here working and doing great things. I have a new CD out that's on, I guess it's on where you can't go to the little record stores anymore, but it's out there in cyberspace someplace. What do you call it, YouTube?
iTunes
and Amazon. Well, you know, I'm still from the old school here. But yeah, my single is called Life's Been Good to Me, and it's there. People can go and look into that. I have a website, marywilson.com. And a lot of my what I'm doing today is there. I have a gown exhibit that tours around the world of all the Supremes gowns that have been that we wore back in the day. And so there's lots of things that are going on, so people can go to my website and probably catch up with all of those. But the main thing is my latest CD.
Well, the latest CD you can check out on iTunes. Go to marywilson.com for more information on all the cool stuff that is happening. Mary Wilson, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's my pleasure as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, you can find out more information by going to marywilson.com. The new CD set is Diana Ross and the Supremes' 50th anniversary, the singles 1961 to 1969. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.